Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Tuesday, February the 24th, 2015. It's actually my son's birthday. Happy birthday, Ryan. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. Love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. Michael, Ron? Well, for some reason, I got it. There you are.
Mute challenge. Mute challenge got me, sweetie. Anyway, welcome. We're delighted that you're here to join us today. And we are blessed to have this opportunity to spend this time to talk about reinforce, understand, practice, and strengthen the ability to recognize exactly what forgiveness is and how to stay connected to that space of love that we all started out as. It's interesting how in many so-called religious circles, it's considered religious to teach people, to teach especially children that they're basically to beat them into the dirt and tell them what sinners they are, et cetera, when the truth is that each one of us, with our first breath, brought this awesome presence of love into the world. And sadly, those charged with supporting that have to a great degree been responsible for that understanding of the truth of that awesome presence of love that we are being lost in the world and being beaten into submission to a different doctrine, a different belief system, an insane belief system that doesn't teach children how to, as the ancient scriptures say, as many are sons and daughters of God as are led by the Spirit of God. This isn't a religious idea that if we literally live in contact with the eternal forces around us, then we are directly guided by the Creator in our actions, in our words, and in our world. And yet, you know, you go back into the ancient scriptures and they tell us very clearly, very, very clearly, that fear is a doctrine of men. And these men stand around in their fear mode, men and women. Unfortunately, I've heard many a child who was beat into submission by a fierce, vicious-mouthed female as well as male, telling the child what was wrong with them and how they were less than what they are. And, you know, when you stop and really think about it, and if you've ever held a newborn child, you know exactly what the awesome presence of love is. You know what a human life is. You and I started out that way. That first breath brought this awesome presence of love that you are into the world. If you're not still breathing that in on a moment-to-moment basis, you might want to ask yourself why. You might want to ask yourself, what happened that you lost contact with that. Who told you a lie about you and about the Creator and inspired fear in you so that you live in fear? Who lied to you about yourself and the Creator so that you live in hostility and think that hostility is a normal state? And who are the perpetrators of these lies? And are we willing to really, truly, truth enough to let those lies go? It's time for that to happen. It's time for us to realize that each one of us is made of this stuff called love. And that when acknowledged, there's actually an awesome film out there. If you haven't seen it yet, Jeannie and I went to see it the other night. We both sat there in tears. It was so, so powerful. It's called McFarlane, true story. Town in Southern California named McFarlane. With basically, it's a farm town, and the kids in the town are, you know, mostly aliens who are taught they're pickers, and they're going to be pickers for life, and that's just the way it is. And, you know, there's no life ahead for them. They're always going to be on the bottom of the barrel. They're going to work their bodies until they die, and that's just, you know, a picker is a picker is a picker is kind of the message that these kids are given. And there's a teacher very powerfully played by Kevin Costner. It's kind of nice to see Kevin Costner back in a few movies. He kind of disappeared for a while there. But he's kind of a down-and-out teacher. He's been fired from two or three jobs. He's got an excuse for each one of them, but in the bottom line, he accepts this job in this, basically what's considered to be a sort of a low-life town. And, you know, everything is a challenge, and everybody lives on the bottom of the barrel. And over time, he's brought in as a football coach, and, you know, the football team is a joke. But each day he watches as these kids who are pickers, as they have to go off into the fields with their families at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to pick so that families can survive. And he watches them as these kids run across the fields like the wind. And he's amazed and gets an idea that it's time to start a track team in a town that kids don't even have running shoes. And, you know, everybody's like, you know, what a joke. These kids are just a waste of time. What are you wasting your time for? And true story, there's some awesome pictures of each of these kids that are, you know, kind of down and out lost kids. And just powerful to watch a man dedicate his life to making a difference in the world and in the lives of these kids, inspiring them, pushing them. In one case, a man who's a tough guy, and when he's getting ready to commit suicide, he just pulls him off a bridge and holds him and holds him. That awesome active presence of love showing up so powerfully. And here's a whole group of kids who are losers who end up winning the state championship. And every one of them goes to college. First time for anybody in any of their families to complete college. And, you know, it's such a powerfully inspiring story when one person decides to go out of their way and make a difference, and one person sees something true about another. You know, we see religious leaders who see nothing but the garbage in others, nothing but the trash, and rail and beat and abuse and cajole into the belief that we belong in the dirt. Power, this guy as a school teacher in this, you know, lost town, in this lost city, is more a priest, more a rabbi, more a minister, more than just about any minister I've ever seen. And instead of preaching why they're down and out and that they need to stay that way. And maybe if they say some magic words, somebody will come along after their death and save them. He actually sees the truth in them. He has humility. Interesting, in the Aramaic language, the word humility means a mental quality of being able to look for and cooperate only with the highest and best in another. And he sees the power and the beauty in these kids who are just so down and out, and he works with them and works with them and works with them until they start to believe it and bring it forward. And it's just, I mean, talk about a heartwarming, powerful story that I hope will inspire millions to step forward and do something in the world about a situation that that so many kids are being taught that they're worthless. Time for a change. Time to start to see these children as who they really are. Presence of love that we're designed to be. And that's what we're here to support in the world. And we're delighted that you're here to join us today. Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us?
He is. And I just wanted to say that also made me think of Graham Moore in his speech. He got the best adapted screenplay for The Imitation Game during the Oscars on Sunday. We didn't watch the Oscars, but I wish that we had, because it seems like the ones that got the awards, most of them anyway, had some phenomenal speeches, like they've really come aware. But I'll read his. It says, he says, "I tried to commit suicide at 16, and now I'm standing here. I would like to take this moment to be for that kid out there who feels like he or she doesn't fit in anywhere. You do. Stay weird. Stay different. And then when it's your turn, you'll be standing on this stage. Pass that message along." I thought that was really powerful.
Human life's awesome when it shows up. And thank God that he stayed alive at 16, and would that we could hold the space, and that each of these kids that's been beat into the ground and taught they're valueless. And sadly, people are afraid to confront the religions that do this to children. They are so stuck in their dogma and their belief. They're like, oh, no, that's biblical. That's just, and it's all a lie and a fraud based on nothing but fear and hostility in the minds of men. And so, yeah, it's awesome to see that fellow come out. And I don't remember the name of the older gentleman who won an Academy Award, but as he stood up and said, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a parent or two parents alive, you know, pick up your phone, talk to them, call them and tell them you love them. It's like, how cool is that? Sometimes they are changing. I mean, that's Hollywood. Hollywood. How powerful.
That was J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons, yeah. That was just an awesome, awesome piece for the Tam presented. And so, what can each of us do? You have any thoughts on that, Dr. Tim?
Well, what each of us can do is go inside more often and not be too distracted by the outside. I was reading a little from one of the books somebody who's in a 12-step program recommended for me, Dancing Standing Still, Healing the World from a Place of Prayer.
Mm.
And, it's by Richard Rohr, who I think was a Franciscan priest.
Right.
And in the part that I was reading this morning, it was all about Aldous Huxley and The Brave New World, and I forget the other writer, but George Orwell's 1984. And the idea is that both of these authors were convinced that something overwhelm us or trap us. And I think Orwell had the idea that someone outside of us in the government would trap us and control us. And Aldous Huxley had the idea that what's inside of us is going to trap us. What we hate is going to trap us from Aldous Huxley and or from Orwell, and what we love is going to trap us, distract us to the outside stuff. And so his point is simply, full human life demands the interior work. And so each of us can do our own internal work, is my thought. You know, what can we do? Well, if we heed your words, Michael, and recognize that our true nature is that energy of love, if any time we're feeling unlike that, that's our alarm system telling us we have work to do. And my work is not anyone or anything outside of me. Whatever is inside of me that's keeping me from seeing and feeling and living from my true nature. And that's why I like these tools, because they're all focused on the internal and they're all very practically productive. That's my offering for today.
Awesome. Well, it's interesting how in this film, this teacher, you know, I mean, he doesn't talk about forgiveness and he's not doing it, but the space that he is and that he holds, and the simple fact, the main tool, it appears to me at least, that he uses is he sees the truth about these kids. Kind of like in the movie Avatar, I See You.
Yeah.
He really was the space and could see these kids for who they were and what was possible, and that one person, especially an authority, who could anchor for these kids, I am valuable, I have worth, I have skills, I have talent, and I can do it. And, you know, on an energetic level, on a resonance level, I think that, you know, to me, the principle involved here is that just his holding that space and that energy is one of the things that drew these young men into their full potential. And, you know, each of us can do that for each other, and really seeing and holding that space on deeper and deeper levels is such an awesome gift. And interestingly enough, quite contrary to what the Greeks have taught us about humility, that, you know, we need to grovel in the earth like a worm, that it really is a mental quality. And in this movie, he really demonstrates this mental quality of perceiving and cooperating with the highest and best in these young men and drawing it forward and changing lives. I mean, just like so dramatically, you know, families who, you know, these kids, like, will always be pickers. In college, you got to be kidding. Every one of them ends up, you know, running track for this university, that university, that university, and really, because someone held the space for them, changed their world, and empowered them to go out and change the world of others. It's just, you know, it's such a powerful example of the work in action. It's very, very inspiring. Actually, there's another film that, you know, we mentioned back a few months ago that we had watched called Freedom Writers. It's very similar. A young woman goes into a school very naive and enthusiastic, and she's going to change the world. And, you know, it's such a down-and-out system. And again, and that one's Freedom Writers, based on a true story. And in a very similar vein, she really reaches to these kids. She does it differently. She doesn't take them out and, you know, teach them to run track, to take the natural talent that they have and express it, but rather she actually ends up getting them interested. She's, you know, there's a lot of it. I believe it was in L.A. and gangs, and so she kind of leads them on a path, starting out with the comment, "You guys think you're tough, you're gangbangers. Like, well, let me show you some real gangbangers, some real, you know, you think you invented tough." And she ends up taking this whole classroom of kids to the Holocaust Museum to see what Hitler and his thugs did, and, you know, makes the comparison of the thugs in the streets of L.A. And she gets them interested in, you know, each each student gets the name of someone who was in the concentration camps, and they follow this person through the Holocaust Museum and at the end find out whether or not they survived or not. And gets these kids to start to write their stories. And, you know, it's just one person who cares can make such a difference. One person who cares.
And some would say that's all it ever has.
Yes. Yes. Yep. So I'm glad you care enough to be hanging out with us, Dr. Tim, and to be part of everything that we're creating and, you know, the extension of the work and the work you're doing with people is just an awesome gift to us and our world and empowering us to expand and take this into more and more circles. I actually opened communication yesterday with a man in from Lebanon who is wanting to translate the work into Arabic, and he's quite distraught about the events that are happening in the Middle East, and he translates into Arabic and wants to start to translate the work and bring it into the Arabic community to make this forgiveness process available. And so it's kind of another interesting direction of someone who cares and wants to make a difference, and how each person can do that is in their own small way or large way is amazing. But those two films are, you know, if you want to be inspired to really do something valuable, watch the movie McFarland, watch the movie Freedom Riders. Actually, after we watched the film the other night, I got on the phone. There's a young man named Yusuf who was a shepherd boy in Palestine at the age of 13. And the next week he found himself at Ellis Island, was displaced. He's become a pretty dear friend. He's now in his 80s. And he was sharing with us, actually, have been working to try and get him to come forward with his story. He taught school for a time period and made the kind of difference that we're talking about. And I've been trying to get him now for over a year to get his story down in writing and made into a movie, because it's inspiring. Kind of one person makes a difference, as an example. So pretty cool how so many people take a hold of these tools and step out into the world. You know, you look at what Julie's done with the Healing Children, Loving Children, and the number of kids that she touched with the tools is nothing short of amazing. And I don't know if Magda is with us today. If she happens to be, she might call us. And something, I'm not sure what exactly, but she had texted me after the show yesterday about how powerful it was for her. And Magda, if you happen to be there, I'd love to hear your sweet voice. And what was it that struck you in particular about the show yesterday? It would be nice to hear from you. But it's amazing to watch how each person can make a difference. So any themes happening in practice today, Dr. Tim? Anything to share that in that direction?
Well, the theme last night was the idea of this willingness. It's kind of a continuation of yesterday's. It went all through the day. About half the people were willing to look at what they've hidden in their unconscious, and the other half were just terrified of it. And the idea of trying to convince people that it's absolutely safe to look at what's in my unconscious because I have already lived through it, experienced it, judged it, labeled it, cataloged it, and then decided to hide it from myself.
Right.
So I've thoroughly processed everything I've already lived through, and it's an erroneous, it's an unhealthy process that we do mentally, this mental gymnastics of creating an unconscious body of thoughts and impressions and beliefs. And then I label it with the conclusion it's too much for me to deal with, and then I spend my life trying to avoid it and blame it on other people and blame the pain I feel and the fatigue I feel and the confusion I feel from trying to run from my own experience and my own belief system. I blame it on others and the world and my inadequacies, and all I really have to do is slow down, take a breath, use some tools, be willing to look at what comes up and demonstrate to myself that I've already lived through it. There's nothing, Guy Finley says, there is no such thing as bad self-knowledge. There's no bad fact about me hidden in my unconscious. There are only bad conclusions, false conclusions. So that was the theme yesterday.
Okay. Awesome. And I like to remind people that, you know, you live through it on the way in, you'll live through it on the way out, and when it's out, you're finished with it. You don't have to keep doing it over and over and over and over again. And there's that old adage that says, the coward dies 1,000 times, the brave only once. And the one who refuses to open that veil and look at their own content has no idea that that content is playing out in their physiology, as their diseases, their disorders, their aches, their pains, their aging, their deterioration. They have no idea it plays out in the words they speak, the thoughts they think, the feelings they feel in their relationships, and they wonder what's wrong with their relationships or their finances or their communities, whatever, and have no idea. It's all smoke and mirrors, and it's all just that stuff that we're carrying around that's not necessary to carry around. Absolutely, totally, completely unnecessary. And, you know, watching this film, McFarlane was such a good bird's eye view of how the thoughts these kids carried around had determined their family systems for generations, and without intervention, you know, if we'd have gone back to these kids 40 years later, they'd have simply been repeating, you know, here one dad's in jail, a brother's in jail, and, you know, and they're out in the field picking. There's a funny scene in it. Kevin Costner's like, well, if what I need to do to get these three brothers, who dad needs them in the field to work, if what I need to do is go out and pick with you guys, and that's what I'll do. And he goes out and he lasts a day, and it's like, oh, too much for me. It's a kind of a funny scene, but he gains an appreciation. And actually, there's a particular speech that he does when they're going to the state championships, and they're there, and these kids are, you know, their inferiority, what they've been told about themselves. You know, these other kids are looking down. They're the Ivy League kids with their fancy, you know, jackets and running shoes and all of that. And they're making jokes about these Hispanic kids and, you know, tacos and, you know, just plain, simple meanness. And he gathers these kids around. He says, you know, you kids have one thing that none of these other kids have a clue about and know how to do. They'll never know what it means to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go to work and work for hours and then run to get to school, do a day's schoolwork, run back to the field and work into the dark. You've got something none of these Ivy League kids will ever comprehend and could never do, and you've already done it. And he just, you know, inspires them with the truth of who they are. It's just, can't say too many great words about it. Very, very powerful. So, Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room to be aware of, or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up?
Yes, to both of those. First in the chat room. Okay, first in the chat room, we were talking about energy, and someone asked, what did we mean by energy? And I proceeded to say, you know, if you could look at your so-called body, you would see that you're actually made up of neutrons, protons, electrons, and light, and it's all moving around. It's energy. It's motion, and that whatever energy is within us is what we draw to us, like draws like. And I use the example of the tuning forks, and that if we hold, say, if I hold fear, that I'm going to draw an angry person probably into my space to bring up my fear, to give me the opportunity to get rid of my fear. And
right,
that the other person is actually just a trigger. And they said that it sounds like it's pretty vague. So can you go into a better detailed descriptor of what we mean by energy and how we draw to us the circumstances and the things it started out talking about our timeline in life. And so can you go into a little better descriptor of what we mean by energy and how we draw things to us in our timeline?
Sure. Well, the example I like to use, or another one besides the tuning fork, is if you think of, you know, I have two baby grand pianos. And if I go in and hit, let's say, the note A on this baby grand piano, and I walk over and I open the cover of the second baby grand piano, there are hundreds of keys in there. But if I look carefully, the only keys that will be moving will be the strings that will be moving. There are hundreds of strings there. The only strings that will be moving will be the strings that relate to the key of A. And so what is energy? I hit A on this piano, the strings move, and their movement sets up an energy wave. Another way to think about it is, imagine that I'm standing underwater with a pail of water in my hand, and I'm spinning that pail of water. What's going to happen? A wave, in this case it's a water wave, but with the piano it's an energy wave, a sound wave goes out. So when I spin this pail of water around, 360 degrees off of the pail goes a wave of water. A sound wave radiates off of each string that vibrates when I hit A. Because the atomic magnetic structure is the same in the strings in the second piano, there is a transfer of the energy of that sound wave from the first piano to the second piano, and all of the strings related to A will be in motion. So the tuning fork piano are an example of inanimate objects, when set in motion, creating motion through their energetic transfer in other energy systems. Middle C tuning fork to middle C tuning fork. Second tuning fork starts to move. A notes hit on the first piano, strings relating to A move in the second piano because of the transfer of energy. And now think of that in terms of the contents of your mind. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, what happens is, through resonance, the brain cells that hold the color of your car will begin to vibrate, literally go into activity and begin to move. When mind energy moves in you, in other words, whenever you think a thought, standing underwater and swinging that pail of water around, there, 360 degrees is a wave that comes off of those brain cells that are moving at that particular frequency. And when you look at an animate system, you know, the tuning fork, the pianos are inanimate. But in an animate system, not only is there motion created, i.e., I think a thought of fear, and anyone who's nearby who has thoughts attuned to fear, and let's say my fear is of someone's anger, so anyone, those are the brain cells firing in me, in the same way as when I hit the A on the first piano, that's going to set up a field that will transfer its energy to the second piano. In the same way, the person who is nearby that holds the same brain cells that hold that fear about anger, and perhaps has the anger, that energy is going to move in them. And in the same way as it moves in them, it moves them. It creates an attraction or a resonance. So in an animate system, such as a human system, if you go back to the ancient scriptures where they were talking about physics, they said, ask and you receive. In other words, set up a frequency and somebody's going to deliver it. Somebody's going to show up. Somebody's going to move toward you that holds whatever that is. And if it's hatred and fear and grief and rage and pain that you hold in you, someone's coming to dinner. Someone's going to move in your direction. And if it's love and being and respect and humility, then someone's going to come and move toward you who holds those similar energies. And so we live in an energetic universe. If we listen to Max Planck, here's a gentleman back at the turn of the century, 1900 or so, who was receiving a Nobel Prize in physics. And here's what Max Planck says. As a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world, he says, is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another, within another. And so every bit of energy that you and I engage in, we nest, Quincy, within us. What we nest within us sets up an energy wave that creates motion in other animate systems and motion toward us of those other animate systems. And so when, instead of pointing my finger at the person who shows up and blaming them for what I'm feeling, when I can stop and say, I'm feeling something. Charlie just did a behavior, and I realize I have terror. Now, I can play the denial game and pretend that Charlie is terrorizing me. I can say, Charlie, you're to blame. You terrorize me. Or I can actually grow into an adult and say, you know, Charlie, that behavior you just did, it was kind of wild to watch you do it. In fact, I wonder what kind of pain's going on for you that you did that. But what I realize is that it resonated terror in me. And so being of an adult mind and a sound mind, I choose to own and learn to forgive my terror. And so now, as a result of Charlie showing up and doing what crazy things he did, I get to heal my terror. It's an awesome game when you step in and recognize that everything you feel comes from nested frequencies, energies within you. So I hope that kind of gets the point and helps the person asking the question to understand what we're talking about.
Well, he actually, I said it must have been hitting too close to home. He came back just a minute before you finished and said, the description is far too materialistic. I have to run. So he checked out of the chat room.
Brain cells building.
Yeah. But we do have a hand up in the switchboard, and it's area code 765. You're on the air. Is this Sunny?
Yes, this is Sunny.
Hey.
Sunny.
Oh,
hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for riding the same wave with me, guys. I am doing some worksheets with myself, Michael, on why it is I am not actually fully teaching this stuff yet, especially to these young people, as you and Dr. Tim opened the show with. And I'll definitely be getting these films and hopefully at least watching them with at least my daughter. We've had some stuff going on with surrounding suicidal tendencies with these young people. And a little bit of story. It's been nearly 2 years ago this young man did, in fact, commit suicide at 14 years old. And my daughter's fellow classmates, the boy loved Batman. So the theme of Batman carries on. And as these boys are turning 18, their memorial tribute to Charles is to go out and have a Batman tattoo. Some put his name on it, some put the date on it. And it is really kind of very telling, and I'm watching, you know, these kids that are surfacing. There is a particular young man that is the best friend of my daughter's boyfriend, who just had his tattoo done about 2 weeks ago,
Right.
But his issues are surfacing, and that his rage and anger in his other areas of his life are turning up, where he was put in detention last week. And then he's done this to my daughter as well, what he tells these kids, instead of the little pun of, you know, go, you know, like, go screw yourself or whatever, when he's mad at somebody, he tells these other kids, oh, go kill yourself. And some of these kids are like, hey, wow, you know, and you being one bearing Charles' tattoo, come on, really, you know. And there were some other instances that have come up around this, and I've seen how it has affected my daughter and her boyfriend. It's been very hurtful, and they love Jack, and they want to love him, and they're trying to support him, but they didn't know how. And so I have done the best I can with, that was where I found myself. I felt like there was no other way to approach this for myself from where these kids know. I insisted that these kids come to my home Friday after school, that they were not all going to the dance together, because my daughter would not be around this young man until I had a conversation with him. And I did several worksheets throughout the day on my own rage and anger and the things that came up for me. You know, the little, like, oh, you know, you're 18 and you're old enough. Grr, right? And I told him, this is my typical person would do this, say these things. My unconscious, carbon-based memory person would do these things to you, Jack. But the love speaks to me differently. And so I've started this work with the kids on that level. And then my daughter reported to me yesterday that, yeah, that conversation you had with Jack didn't last very long. So, I don't know where I might go. If you could support me in this with getting these kids to physically pick up these worksheets and have it be received by them as more than a conversation, or at what point it becomes more than a conversation with kids of this age, to where they hear you and they accept this and they're willing to even look at the paper, much less lay pen to the paper.
So here would be my input at this point. If you watch both of the films we talked about, the Freedom Riders and McFarlane, the real key was that each of these teachers was able to see past the facade into who these kids were.
Right.
And found a way to draw who they were into action and activity in their minds and in their lives, to literally join with them, as I see it, joining with the truth of who they are. You know, when you hold a newborn child, you recognize that every one of them is this awesome, every one of us, pardon me, is this awesome potential of love, the same potential in every human being that ever existed, and that if someone in authority can see that in them and hold the space for that, then through resonance they can help to draw that into expression. And so I don't know exactly the circumstances for, you know, all of what's going on with these kids, but with this young man, you know, one of the thoughts is that what you might start to work with them with, it would be simpler than the worksheet is, you know, in Julie's book, and of course it's on the website, there's the I Am Somebody. And these kids haven't been taught who they are.
Right.
And not having been taught, having not been taught who they are, it's hard for them to attune to the truth of who they're designed to be. You know, when kids are beat into the dirt with messages that sadly come from many religions and from many circles, play out whatever they've been beat into. And so if you could imagine children who have never heard anything else about themselves than that statement on the in Julie's book of Who Am I? And so just imagine if each of us had not heard any conversation ever about being a sinner, God creating hell, you've displeased God, you all that insanity.
Right.
Imagine if what each of us heard, and perhaps this young man might hear this, were to tap into these words. Who am I? I am somebody. I am bright, capable, and lovable. I am teachable and learn easily. I'm willing, receptive to truth, and supportable. I'm a gentle listener, and I am honest. I am respectful of myself and others. I'm cooperative and responsible for my feelings and choices. I'm able to see the highest and best in myself and others and support that with my thoughts, words, and actions. I'm able to use time wisely. Time is valuable to me. I may possibly be each day. I am somebody. I am love. Probably not an idea that this young man has ever heard before. This young man has probably been given images of how destructive he is, how negative he is, how worthless he is. And he's living up to the words that he's heard in his culture. One of the things that happens is that the words that we hear from a power person tend to become such a deep part of our regulatory speech system that they regulate our behaviors all our lives until those speech patterns are uprooted and replaced with something different. Of course, they can't be replaced with something different if we never hear something different. So maybe
right.
a place to start, rather than the forgiveness worksheet at this point, the place to start might be with something as simple as, I am somebody. And, you know, perhaps introduce them to the commitment. You know, start off with that and then take it to the next level and invite these kids to start to take the commitment to self and read it to themselves in the mirror and start to get into their speech system something other than the insanity that this culture is teaching them about themselves and each other. And, of course, ultimately, the forgiveness process is going to be one of the key tools because there obviously is so much pain that these kids are carrying around that it just blows them out, just knocks them unconscious.
Yeah.
And so for you to, and I acknowledge you for doing the worksheets that you're doing, to be able to let go of your hostility and fear, and, you know, The part of you that can draw Jack as a human being into awareness and expression in his body-mind unit is the part of you that is love. If you approach him out of your fear or your hostility or your pain at hearing the words he's saying to these kids, then you're not going to be able to resonate that higher energy in him.
Exactly.
As you forgive those parts of you and stand in that space, that's when you've got the best chance of literally being able to see and resonate with who he really is and draw him in. And so these words might be a good starting point of I am somebody.
I appreciate that. I've attempted, it's also an inadvertent way of my getting the message to my daughter now that she has a subject, you know, like my daughter is my subject of my concern, if you will, in teaching her this stuff so that she's
sure.
got a blessing in her life. She wants this so much for Jack, Dave, so.
Yeah.
And
perhaps having the conversation you and I just had with your daughter. And
yeah.
Look, honey, here's how we can get Jack to tap in. Jack's forgotten who he is. And
wow.
Here's a statement of who he is. Maybe you can get the this to him. Maybe you can talk to him about the truth of who he is and help him to start to crack through and break through his pain.
Right. And I spoke to her, too, in a way that, like, okay, you know, your anger is your anger. When he says or does these things, it's triggering you, honey. And that's something we'll take a look at. But in the moment, just love him and say something kind back to him he's not going to expect. It's a nice, you know, we're in the car on the way to school this morning. And I said, just respond to him in kindness as opposed to being combative back at him. And he'll be very surprised that when he meets with your love and your kindness, he's not getting the typical response. And he'll either quit doing it or he'll see that part of you and want to have that part of you for himself. So, and I think she got that. So, but it's
cool.
My large part of my work are the pain of, you know, really seeing these children hurting and suffering. And where do I start, and where are my credentials?
You start with your healing. With your healing. Your credential is this. You face and you heal your terror, your fear, your pain, and you are credentialed to support them.
You might
explain to your daughter, or maybe even have her listen to the earlier part of the show where we talked about energy and resonance, and explain to her that in order to buy your jack, you know, only the A keys on piano number one can resonate the A strings in piano number two.
Yes.
Only as your daughter taps into I am somebody can she resonate and hope to pull that in. Explain that eddy of resonance to her, and that may be the way she gets it and inspires her to go for, okay, I'm going to start to use this in the mirror with me so that I can be strong enough as a space of love to pull Jack back into his body and into our world again.
And Jack is a blessing in this reflectedness for her, too. It's like, and she's seeing this. I really saw her get it, that here's yet another guy like her daddy that is not so much fun for her. And it's like to have her process, this is where she is in counseling, to actually communicate her thoughts and her feelings and process her own emotions about that and know that she is not the subject of their untruth, that those things are untrue. And, this is such a beautiful dynamic, and I'm just hoping I'm holding up to it all, Michael. I love you.
Keep doing your work. You're capable of it. Keep doing your work. Another thought that comes is, you know, there's a link on our website, we've talked about this many times before, of a true story of Christian the Lion. And, you know, if you don't remember or you haven't heard it before, these two guys in London go to Harrods department store and they buy a pet lion, a cub, and they raise it. And they end up shipping it off to a preserve as it gets so big they can't handle it, a preserve in Africa. And about a year later, they want to go and see this lion, and they're told that this thing is just now, you know, the head of its own pride. They've got a tracking device on it, and it's a wild animal. It would tear them to shreds. And they express that they want to go and see and visit their lion. And so the preserve owners don't have much choice. They send out one of their guards with a high-power rifle because they figure they're going to have to shoot this lion. They've got a tracking device on it, so they know approximately where it is. And so they're out there yelling and shouting for this lion to come. And this lion ends up charging down the hill at them, jumps up on them, plays with them, hugs them, licks on them, just like, you know, oh my God, we're getting to see our oldest, dearest friend. But the thing to point out to her, and to me, one of the most powerful parts, and of course you could point it out in the way of a question, to watch that video with her and watch what the female does. Because the female lion has never been exposed to humans, is a totally wild lion, and yet she comes down the hill with him, with her mate, and I'm sure that, you know, up the hill, Christian Lion didn't say, "Dear, these are my friends, don't eat them." Watch that with her and then ask her, why do you suppose the female didn't attack these two men? And see if she gets the piece about he is the space of love for these guys. And even with this totally wild, I mean, the female is the huntress, totally wild lion, and she rubs up against them like a kitty cat. And to help her to understand the principle of resonance, and that, you know, to me, the principle behind why does she function lovingly toward these men? Because Christian is such a powerful space of connected love with them, and they with him, that it opens that space in her. And that's what she wants to do with Jack and her friends, is open that space. And the only way you can open that space is to be that space.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, I thank you very, very much because, as I say, this is multifaceted and it is so much of, you know, just working with
big
these
stuff.
Where I hope to be. And it is big stuff because it is tight, sensitive, you know, subject matter that to really hope that you have not said anything that triggers them at any point. And because, Richard, my daughter's friend, has said, when Jack gets here, do not mention his childhood or he will get up and leave. So, the strongest thing that I could do is I stood there, like I've been tearing here in the subject, you know, processing my emotions, and explained to Jack, I was like, Jack, there's a part of me I'm still working on that is so mad at you that if I don't cry, I'm going to be a lunatic. I'm going to be screaming. My typical self, just that's where I'm stopping myself from going right now. And all I can do is love you and be the one parent out of Richard's mom and dad and your own mom and dad and the little girl that sent you to the attention, her parents. I'm standing here. I'm willing to invite you to my home to let you know that you're bigger than this and you're better than this. And you got to pay attention, hon. You are loved and you're cared for, and all this stuff isn't necessary, and whatever's going on inside of you is okay. If you can call me anytime, if it's hard to talk about, that's great. That's where it's really great, when it's really hard to talk about, but you have to, because it wants to become bigger than your best person, and you can't let that happen, or you're going to have more days like this. You know, it's about the only way I can put it to them. And that particular
space.
I thank you so much. God bless you.
Hold the space. Jeannie, do you have anything to add? We're down to about 90 seconds.
No, I think that pretty much gets it.
Dr. Tim, do you have any other thoughts to add quickly? I assume Dr. Tim's dropped off. All right, well, we're down to the last few seconds, so we just hold the space for you, Sonny, and for the kids that you're working with, and we see the you being strengthened in your state of being to draw each of these kids fully into expression in their lives. Watch McFarlane. That's exactly what he does. It's a great modeling of it. By the way, if you happen to be in South Florida, starting Sunday, we'll be at Unity in Pompano doing a full week of workshops. Jump on whyagain.org to get the schedule. And bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. And, you know, an awesome gift you can give the world is to have the best year yet of your eternal life. We're here to support you doing that. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.